Brendan Sinclair's Business Myths, news and advice on marketing, media and the web. Hello and welcome to show number 46. Today is Friday, the 25th of August. My name's Tina Goodman and today I'm joined by not only Brendan, but also Anthony, our programmer here. How are you going, Anthony?
Just fine, thanks, Tina. How are you?
Yep, and how are you going, Brendan?
I'm fine. Nervous, Anthony?
Just a little. You're both staring at me.
Oh, yeah? You're nervous. I'm a little nervous.
Really?
No, just kidding.
Yeah, I thought
What are we going to talk about today, Tina?
Today we're going to talk about a day in the life of a programmer at Tailored.
It's going to be a big snooze fest then, isn't it? Pretty. Come on, it's a program, it's boring, it's code stuff.
I don't know, is programming boring, Anthony?
Oh, Brennan would think so.
What do you think?
Yeah, it'll take us through a day. What happens when you come to work and talk us through what sort of work you're doing and stuff?
Well, I get here about 8:15 or so. Then I just sort of put my feet up on the desk and rest till you get here about 9:30.
People don't need to know that, mate.
Why do you even get in at 8:15, though? You could just get in at, like, 9:15.
Like you.
Pretend you've been...
What do you reckon every time as you get in? Like, 9:30? Okay, sorry, back to Anthony. Okay, so take us through a typical kind of day. What sort of stuff is there to do?
Okay, at any one time, I could have requests from you that have come in during the night to fix up typos or put images on pages, things like that. I'll have requests from clients to change their copy of their website to add new features, which is in no way, shape or form even possible to add.
That's a request from me.
No, that's more the clients.
Yeah. I mean, obviously our clients a lot of the time have limited understanding of the web and it's our role to guide them in the appropriate way, which we certainly do to a significant extent. Any clients out there listening. Okay, so what other stuff do you then move on to do?
So of late, I've been spending the majority of every day just working on our big super secret project.
Yep.
Details will be released in time, I'm sure, but that's been keeping me very busy.
Do you have enough to do each day, or are you standing around twiddling your thumbs?
I don't tend to spend much time standing around.
Yes, to listeners, Anthony has, I think his total amount of breaks since he's been with us, about 18 months, he's had lunch breaks and afternoon tea breaks, I think, in total of about 37 minutes over that 18 months. okay, what do you find the most interesting aspect of the job?
Probably starting a new project from scratch, where we get in there and just figure out what we can do, what we can't do, what the client needs. And I just start getting in there and laying the groundwork for it. It's just fun to lay the groundwork out, and the more into the fine details you get, the more boring it kind of gets. So
yeah,
that's why the start's always fun.
Do you find it frustrating that you don't get any support? Support the right word?
Do you find it frustrating that Brendan has a fairly limited understanding of programming and you have to explain the reasons behind doing things to him all the time?
I don't think I would have put it quite like that.
At times, a little bit.
No, not limited, like, compared to the general population, but limited compared to yourself.
I'll just jump right in there and say, I don't care. Like, I reckon it's good that I've got absolutely no clue and I'm a complete Gumby, because if Anthony can explain it to me to understand, then we can get it, we can communicate that to the clients, I reckon.
Yeah.
I reckon that's a real strength, that I'm a gumbish.
I get practice at dumbing things down, you mean?
Yes, thank you very much. What do you see as the biggest challenge in your role here?
Definitely some of the clients we have. Some get very frustrating.
Mm. I guess that's a lament for, I guess, every business person.
Yeah, if we didn't have any clients, it'd be such a good, great business.
I mean, we've got some fantastic clients.
We do.
Easy and Cruising and all the rest of it. And it's a matter of me as the manager to try and weed out those clients who we don't want, who don't pay really late, don't pay enough, are just too hard work. They're the sort that you really struggle to get out of your business because they're not going to help you grow the business.
Just on clients, though, I think it's actually quite the challenge of dealing with people and from all different walks of life and all different ideas and business ideas. Quite interesting. Like, you learn a lot about a lot of different businesses, which is interesting.
Oh, yeah, it is. And it's a big challenge to deal with clients on an ongoing basis, because a lot of time they're spending a lot of money and you need to look after them, give them a lot of information. And, you know, it can be frustrating to communicate effectively with them at times and to get the job done as effectively as possible. But that's the frustration for most businesses.
And the clients are all on different levels too. Like, we have some landscapers, we have engineers, we have scientists among our clients.
Yeah.
So everybody needs a different level of communication.
Yeah, too. Exactly. And it's important to recognise that and sort of tailor your communication to that.
I'm not sure what the rule's called or anything, but I've heard it said that, you know, 90% of your income comes from 10% of your clients. And 90% of your hassles come from 10% of your clients.
So that's very true.
Yeah, the smart thing's identifying which clients are which and weeding them accordingly.
Yeah, yeah. That's the big challenge of your business. Is there a range of things you do here? Is there enough variety in the role?
There's a lot of variety here. What I'm doing, you know, at any moment I could be doing some copywriting for a client. I could be editing images for their photo gallery or for creating a logo or site design for them. I'll be doing some fairly in-depth programming and database queries and so forth, or just some simple HTML and CSS updates.
Do you enjoy all that variety?
Yeah, it's always good. I mean, at any time I've got a half a dozen jobs across all these different fields on my desk, so if I get bored with one, I can just switch over and
jump mines. I reckon that's a positive a lot of time, keep you fresh and
interesting. I like having a lot of things to do as well, because then you can just flick between them.
So what advice would you give to programmers trying to get into the field, trying to get a job with a web developer?
Make contacts. As they always say, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Mm. But it's very handy to be able to back up your talk.
How do you make contacts to start off with if you don't really know that many people? Do you have to make contacts just with your mates or with people in business?
Well, that's one way of doing it. The way I got the job here, actually, was that I saw Brendan had posted on his blog, that he needed a site designed just to make HTML and CSS work done from a graphic.
I think that was on Taylor, one.
That was Epismooth.
Epismooth, wasn't it? Mm. Okay.
And that was a while back, and after I'd done that, Joe was leaving here at the time, so I was invited down for coffee and a job interview. I didn't drink coffee, but I took the job interview.
It was a job interview, wasn't it? About a 5-minute job interview. Have a coffee.
Yeah, it's a long drive for nothing, really.
So how did you get started in programming?
Going back a really, really, really long time, I was a kid with my first computer, and there was this game called Police Quest, and there were the games called Hero Quest and all these sort of ones too, just old crappy games. Some were text-based, some were bad graphics. And I thought it was funny, nobody had ever made a game where you were the criminal, you know, you were always the good guy. So I sat down to write one where you're the bad guy.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't get very far through it, but that was my first foray into programming. And it was kind of fun.
So what, you taught yourself at the start? Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to play those text-based games. Like, you had to guess what word to put in or what to do next.
And we interrupt this broadcast to announce that the new stars of Revenge of the Nerds 3 is Anthony Ferguson and Tina Goodman. Sorry, Anthony, please, go on. So then what?
After that, you know, to be honest, I don't really remember. I think I just played games and went through primary school.
So you did it at primary school?
That was grade 7, I think.
Yeah.
When we first got a computer.
So then when did you figure out, I want to make my career computers?
To be honest, it's never really been a conscious decision. It's just sort of where I wound up.
Yeah?
Yeah. Just one thing led to another.
Yeah. There you go. I thought it would have all been planned out. So what degree have you got?
I have a degree of information environments. That tends to make everybody think of trees and stuff.
Yeah.
It's not really. According to the information, to the degree, an information environment's the room we're sitting in, right? Because there's information in this room.
Yep.
So how could you embed sensors and applications in the walls and stuff to make life easier, to make you interact with the world better, or the data better? Mostly blue sky stuff. They've since renamed the program to Information Technology with Interaction Design.
Oh, yeah.
I think academics should stop thinking up course names. Like, they should just call it what it is. They changed our entire degree name like 3 times while I was at uni.
Is this role you got now, is this the sort of role you envisaged afterwards? Is this, and going on from that question, is this a role that would be sought after from people doing those sort of degrees?
Probably not, although most people, of all the people that have graduated my degree, one guy moved to Canada and opened up a skiing shop. One person packs boxes in a warehouse. Some decided to hang around uni and do other degrees, and most of the rest have ended up doing web stuff of some sort.
Oh, yeah.
So of anybody, that's probably the, even though it's not what we were trained for, web is kind of the next step for us.
Do you learn much on this job?
On this job? Yeah.
Sort of stuff?
Well, when I first started here, I thought I was pretty good at PHP. I've learned a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Now I know I'm pretty good at PHP.
So you're lucky that I didn't know what I was talking about then, wouldn't I? Okay, this place, crap.
Probably. Because, you know, that's one of the things with self-taught. There's no grade at the end to know how you are compared to everybody else kind of
thing. So I didn't do PHP at uni?
No, not at
all. Oh, you're kidding, didn't you?
No.
Ah, you're sacked, mate. I want someone with PHP experience and PHP credentials. This is bullshit.
I don't think there's...
Let's end this interview.
Any uni degree that offers it, though.
Oh, okay. Change between... Okay, stay. Now, you have a well-rounded...
Lucky he said that, otherwise he would just
pissed off. It was off.
Have fun with this.
You have a well-rounded and a huge variety of skills. Is that because you were self-taught, or is it part through the degree?
Bit of both. I've long maintained that most of what I learned at my degree was useless, but the single most important thing I've learned there was kind of learning how to learn.
Yeah.
Because the way that the degree was set up, you'd get given these really big projects and told, okay, you're using these programs and these languages, and see you next week. See you later.
Oh, yeah.
So you'd have to learn how to do all this stuff from scratch with, like, no background experience or training at all in it. So you tend to pick them up pretty quick. So, yeah, then from there I'm self-taught.
Working in a small business, has there been anything that has surprised you or made you take a step back and go, oh, I didn't realise it'd be like that?
Yeah, there's been a few things. One of the first things that struck me, because before I came here down to meet you, I'd been reading your blog for a while. I'd read your business kit, seen your site point articles and all that.
I'm very famous.
Oh, you seem so at the time. What a letdown. So I was surprised by how everything was so casual and kind of informal here. You'd expect like a big high-powered office or something, but it's really not at all. It's a small, agile company. So that's good.
I think one of the most important things in a small business is that you've got to be maneuverable and you've got to get out there and identify different market conditions and get out there and make sales and do this and do that. And your focus is entirely different to my focus, and Tina's focus is entirely different to my focus, and Mel's focus is entirely different to my focus.
Yeah.
But that's one of the strengths. And none of us are afraid to put our two bits in and tell the other person when we think that we could do things better or whatever. And we have differences of opinion. And that's great, because then we get four different focuses and we find the best mix and the best sort of put it all together and get the best solution for the clients, and away you go.
I actually enjoy that, like, we're always taking the piss out of everything, because it makes it really easy to voice an opinion that you're not sure about. Like, you just put it out there and then that'll spark something else.
Hmm.
Like, that sort of dialogue makes it very easy to just to voice an opinion.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good thing about this place. Like, there's always talking and there's always stuff.
Yeah. And there's a lot of crap that gets spoken, but...
Yeah, but occasionally, you know, amongst the crap, there's some really good things.
Yeah, that comes out. And if we didn't speak the crap, then we wouldn't come to the good stuff. Can you see yourself doing your own business?
I used to think I could, but having actually been in a small business now, I'm not so sure.
I'm good, aren't I? You can't benchmark yourself against me, mate. I'm fabulous.
It's not you, mate. It's
your bloody bullshit. Wife. It's not me. It's not my wife. She's got does nothing.
There's no way I could chase an invoice as ferociously as she does.
Because she's so sweet.
She's unstoppable.
Yeah, no, she comes in. She goes, oh, I was just calling to I can't do it as well as she does. But yeah, no, she sounds so sweet. And it makes a person on the other hand feel so guilty. Like, you almost feel sorry for them because they're just squirming in the seat.
And my focus here, ladies and gentlemen, is that cash flow is king. You've got to get the cash in. So you've done the job. They agreed to your terms. So give us the money is essentially it. And for any clients who are out there, obviously you pay the bill. I think with cash flow stuff, I think clients respect you a bit more when you do chase them for the money. Whereas if you don't chase them for the money, they think, great, easy mark, don't have to pay them. It's the squeaky wheel that gets the oil. Pretty much.
There's also might be some the way they perceive value too, because I've noticed, I'm sure you guys have as well, that sometimes when we take on a smaller job and just quote lower for it, you know, it happens from time to time, we quote less than what we usually would. We seem to get less respect and less cooperation from the client as well.
Yeah, that's very true. Because sometimes we charge a lot more than other people, and that's a big benefit. So sorry, I interrupted. What were you saying? So you don't think you could run a small business or...
I don't think I could run a small business as well, no. Just the keeping track of everything, I guess, and chasing up on accounts and
going
out chasing clients. Keep track of everything Mel does. You might just need a,
oh, no, we
all, a very understanding
one. We, on the inside here, we know who's the real boss here.
Oh, yeah, God, yeah. I reckon my biggest strength is that I know I've got no clue. I reckon that's the best thing, because then you identify people who do. Like, I don't want to be too nice to you two or anything, but you guys are great, because you, there's no pretense, there's no mucking around. You do the job, you get it done, you give me your opinion, we have our arguments, whatever, on projects to get the best result for the client. Mel's great at the invoicing and all the rest of it, and I'm just hopeless at that stuff. I'm hopeless at organisation. The only thing I'm only good at communicating, I reckon. That's about it. I've got nothing. I'm good at selling stuff, I suppose, but that's only communication.
Have you heard the term, you've got finders, minders, binders and grinders?
No.
Someone has to find the clients, someone has to mine the clients.
Yeah.
And someone has to, I think, I don't know what the binders do, and the grinders do like all the nitty-gritty work.
Hmm. And people have got different strengths, and I can't do the nitty-gritty work, and I can't do a lot of the stuff. I can't organise things. I couldn't plan out a goddamn database if my life depended on it. I couldn't design if my life depended. I'm all right at copywriting and a few other bits. I'm good at search engine stuff. But it's interesting that we've all got, and that's a really important thing, is that we've all got such different strengths. Because if we all have the same strengths, it would be a waste of a person. If you and I, Tina, for example, had the same strengths.
No one could ever have the same strengths as you, Brendan.
Oh, you're fabulous.
Nice dig. You didn't even get it.
It's a waste of a person if two people agree and they've got all the same sort of skill. So I think we've got the good skill mix. Okay, Anthony, so from your perspective, someone starting out, from your experience, what you've seen, someone starting out, a web development business or any small business, what would be your advice to them?
Get a team of advisors or mentors around you. People with strengths not the same as your own, who can advise you, or that you can just bounce ideas back and forth with.
Mm.
You need a support network there.
I find that really good. I play golf and stuff, and that's a really good thing. The thing I really want to do, and I haven't done it yet, is have lunch with clients or other people out there
in the web industry,
within our own community, because we've got some great resources in terms of clients and great and people we know. I mean, when you look at it, like,
network more with people who have strengths.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Anthony, so probably a good way to finish off show number 46 is something like a top 5 tips on how to get a job, how to be a value to an employer, that sort of stuff. What do you reckon?
Well, I'm no expert with personal development and so forth, but I'd say be careful of your contacts and people around you. Always be friendly and put your best foot forward. Don't try not to burn bridges and so forth, because the value that can be, you know, in there in a relationship, you're doing favours for others, others doing favours for you, it can make a world of difference to you, really. And on that note, look at your personal presentation as well. Get a haircut, take out the nose ring if you want to be taken seriously. Look serious. As a uni student coming into a business, you've often got a very different mindset too. Maybe you're a little naive, you sort of see the world as you think it should be rather than how it is, and the world will crush you, so get over that one quickly. And
do you reckon that's just the idealism of youth, or is it something that you're taught in uni that this is how it should be? And
a bit of both. I know a lot of our lecturers would give us advice which I now know was very, very bad.
Yeah.
Just as far as how to conduct yourself with in a business meeting, for example, would be.
Yeah.
So sort of picture the overpriced consultant who charges, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars an hour and takes hours and hours to do anything.
Yeah.
Sort of wasted time.
Okay.
That sort of advice. Try and understand other points of view as well, because you're in a business. There's a lot of different stakeholders, and you really need to understand all the points of view before you can make an informed and valid decision that'll be of use to anybody.
Yep, that's a good point, because there's so many different focuses that impact on our business decisions, and I'm probably the one with a big picture look, because I know all the clients, I know all the personal relationships that have gone over the years, and probably a good example is that we'll have one client we're doing a job for that's only, you know, $1,000, another client we're doing a job for that's $3,000, and I know that the client worth $1,000 is much, much more valuable to us because he's referred us $40,000 worth of work, he's got a much bigger business and he's got much more potential, whereas the $4,000 job is just a one-off that's not going to amount to anything. And because I know all the personal relationships, I know all the background, I come from it from a completely different focus. And Mel, who does our accounts, comes at it from a different focus too, because the first thing she'll ask is, did you get the check? When are they paying the bill? Whatever. And she's got that focus because that's her job. And your focus is to get the best programming job, best website development for the client.
We're sort of all down in the trenches fighting our own little battles. Yeah, you're up there on the hill, safe on the hill, watching everything from a distance.
Drinking a cappuccino.
And a glass of wine.
And a glass
playing
of
some golf.
I feel a little bit of negative energy here. Sorry, mate, go on.
Finally, most important point, if you're an employee, try to understand you're really going to work for one reason and one reason only. It's not because you're popular. It's not because everybody likes you. Not because everybody gets a laugh out of you. You're there to make your boss money, so do your best at that.
That's one I've really sort of hammered over the years, and I wrote an article a couple of years ago that got a bit of notoriety, and that was the whole focus. You're there to make money. There's, you know, people can fluff around and call, you know, all sorts of different things, but if you're not making money for the business, then the business isn't going to survive. If you're not being value to your employer, then you're not going to survive as an employer. It's that simple. You've got to provide value to your employer, and you've got to understand how you need to achieve that, and it's by getting out there making sales. It's not by bludgeoning and taking an extra half an hour, an hour for lunch, or when you've got nothing to do, just sitting there taking it easy. It's about, you know, always working, always looking to see how you can help the business.
Yeah, be a little proactive about everything.
Yeah, exactly. All right, thanks, mate, and thank you, Tina. That'll do us for show number 46.
Yeah, thanks, Brendan.
As always, Skype us your feedback on our tailored account for Skype and over at tailoredpodcast.com for the rest of our contact details. So thanks for that, and bye from me.
Bye from me.
Thank you and good night.
Brendan Sinclair's Business Myths, news and advice on marketing, media and the web.